Texas has 150 million acres of upland habitats, nearly 200,000 miles of creeks, rivers, and streams, over 1,000 public lakes and reservoirs, 4 million acres of bays and estuaries, and over 100 state and national parks. So there's lots of opportunities to experience the great outdoors in Texas, but where to begin? The book Explore Texas, a nature travel guide, breaks down the state into zones and lays out the top destinations with tips on how to get there and how to make the most out of your trip. Mario Parker is the author.
You hear the saying that Texas is like its own country, but it really is. We're so lucky where we're positioned. We're basically where the East meets the West and where the Great Plains meet the Gulf of Mexico. So there's a lot of ecological diversity here. In fact, we're the second most biodiverse state in the nation. California only outranks us, and I believe that's because they have a full coastline of ocean.
But do people really get a chance to experience everything that Texas has to offer?
That's pretty tough to do. I know when we were doing this book, we had a goal of finishing our travels within a year, but it ended up taking us almost 2.5 years because it's just such a big state. And as you know, and listeners will know, it takes you an entire day to get from Central Texas to the Trans-Pecos area over to Big Bend or El Paso. So yes, folks can do it. And the great thing about it is that it can become a family vacation or a mini vacation, and you don't even need to leave the state. But you're going to be, let's say you start in the Gulf Coast area or Houston, and you decide you're going to head up toward the Piney Woods, you know, head up further north. You're going to be in a different world, but it's still going to be your same state, your same place, your same home, but you're going to be in a different ecological world. You're going to get to see, especially speaking of that area in the Piney Woods, you're going to see a lot of plants you're not going to see anywhere else in Texas. So that's really the bonus, I think, of traveling Texas naturally, is that you're going to see different things in different parts of the state, whereas so many other states, you're not going to really see a whole lot different, you know, going from one side of the state to the other.
But even though there are things almost in your backyard, nearby, within 100 miles, that many people don't really get out to appreciate.
There are a lot of things in Texas that you might drive by every day and not realize what a natural treasure you have there. How much, if you just uncover, just peel back the layers of that a little bit, you're going to find some stuff that you may not have known existed. And that actually points to one of the reasons I wrote the book. We do a lot, Jeff and I do a lot of articles on nature, and we travel a lot. And we noticed that we were going places that folks may not have been aware of, even though they were in their own backyard. And we thought, you know, this isn't always the kind of stuff you can find just Googling. So if we can bring some of these smaller things to their attention, to folks' attention, and let them know, hey, this is really cool, and it's right here. You know, one of the things we're blessed with statewide, actually, that is the monarch migration, and that's about to happen in mid-October. And some folks don't really know when to look for it, but once they know, they'll start seeing butterflies in their own yard.
People are doing this here in Texas, exploring their own state, but also other folks from around the world are coming to Texas. That environmental nature tourism is becoming quite an asset.
It is. It's actually a multi-billion dollar industry in Texas, and we have a lot of folks to thank for that. Governor Ann Richards, or the former Governor Ann Richards, obviously, convened a task force in 1993 to take a look at that. How could we augment the coffers of the state through nature tourism? And the term ecotourism is also used, by the way, so they're the same thing, but we use nature tourism more often in the United States. So she convened that task force in 1993, and a lot of folks went to work and ended up with a report about a year later that said, you know, Texas has got a lot to offer when it comes to nature tourism. And technically, hunting and fishing are included in that. And we knew that that was already a great revenue source, and we had a lot of folks interested in that. But stepping outside of that part of nature tourism, they realized that because we have the Central Flyway, for example, with the birds, again, we've got the monarch migration, we've got 11 different distinct bioregions, and then within each one of those, we have, it even gets more detailed. So looking at all that, they realized that we had a lot that we could explore and let folks know about. And so on that, so Texas Parks and Wildlife got on that bandwagon in 1996, and they started creating the nation's first, well, there were birding trails only, but now they're wildlife trails. But they started developing those with the help of a man named Ted Eubanks with Fermata. And those became the first birding trails in the nation. They started down on the lower Rio Grande Valley because obviously that's well known, actually worldwide for birding. So, but today we have, oh gosh, I think we've got 9 major wildlife loops in Texas, and each one has anywhere from 8 to 15. Well, they're actually 9 major trails, and each one has a loop, has many loops in it that folks can explore. What they've done too with those trails is they've done kind of like what we've done in the book. They've pulled in private and public entities that are going to offer wildlife viewing or nature tourism experiences along the way.
So has nature tourism, is it matured, or have we only just begun to tap into this?
It has matured greatly, but we still have a lot of potential to explore. In fact, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service puts out a report every 5 years, and that report is due again this year, but it hasn't come out yet. But in 2011, they found that actually the part of nature tourism that does not include hunting and fishing exceeds, that there's more people that are interested in nature tourism, for example, wildlife viewing, than there are hunting and fishing anymore. So Texas has been changing its gears a bit. Now, of course, hunting and fishing will remain very, very big here. That's a very important part of our culture and our heritage. But we're starting to see more and more folks that are coming here and staying here and even, you know, participating within a few miles of their own home in wildlife viewing. There's water wandering, all kinds of things that don't include, you know, getting out there and hunting and fishing. And it's really important too. This is, there's something wonderful in nature tourism. You know, we always, folks are always throwing the phrase green around. Well, green doesn't really mean a lot. You know, it's more of a marketing term, in my opinion, but the word sustainability does mean something. And nature tourism offers a way for us to be sustainable. And it offers a way for us to sell experiences rather than things. And that's going to become more and more important because Texas population growth is expected to top 33 million people in the next 15 years. And last year, we exceeded what they expected. We're up to 27 million folks now. So, and our state parks are already overcrowded. I think most folks will find that there's a waiting list for camping and such. So it's obvious people want to get out there. So nature tourism gives them a way to do that, especially nature tourism venues that are privately owned. And that's something we really tried hard to include in the book. We obviously couldn't just do that because there's so many other great things to offer. But we wanted to bring it to folks' attention that a lot of these landowners and small nonprofits, they're working hard to preserve biodiversity, and we can reward them when we go visit their places and pay an entry fee or just bring recognition to what they're doing.
When it comes to nature tourism in Texas, what is the gateway experience and the superstar destination?
The superstar destination. Well, let's start with the superstar activity, and that would be birding. Birding really has been famous. You know, Texas birding has been famous for decades. And I would say the superstar destination is related to that. That would probably be the lower Rio Grande Valley, which gets a lot of attention. So that was another thing we wanted to focus on in the book is how can we get these other places, you know, some attention that's also well-deserved. But the lower Rio Grande Valley is basically a tropical region, and that means that for the most part, it doesn't freeze down there. So you're going to have a lot of flora that you're not going to find elsewhere even in the United States, let alone just Texas. And then you've also got the flyways converging down there, especially near Harlingen. And you're going to have a lot of species, bird species showing up or passing through that you're not going to see anywhere else in the United States. So that is a superstar. But even beyond birding, that is where the concept of the Texas Photo Ranch was born. John Martin and the folks with Images for Conservation helped really get that going. And we've become a worldwide, we've become famous worldwide for with nature photographers for going to some of those private ranches down there, not just the lower Rio Grande Valley, but in the coastal band area as well. And you can photograph, of course, birds, but javelina, bobcats. There's even one ranch, the Santa Clara Ranch, that will wrestle you a Western Diamondback that you can photograph. And then they release it. They have a no kill policy. So that's a pretty unique thing that you can't do that anywhere else that I know of.
I've heard that the whooping crane wintering when they come down to Texas to feed, going to go out and see them, that's a life changing experience.
That is something that's a great example of one of our superstars. The flock that migrates down from Buffalo Wood in Canada, they fly about 2,500 miles every year to Aransas National Wildlife Refuge. And those birds are the direct descendants of the last wild flock before we started working hard to, you know, bring those birds back from the cusp of extinction. Back in the 40s, we only had 16 birds in the wild. Some will say 21. No one's really sure, but we do know it was under 30. And today, that particular group of birds averages about 300. And they will show up usually in late October, and they'll stay through March. And the juveniles will come with the parents, so they start migrating once the juveniles can fly. So you'll see the parents pulling up the crabs, the blue crabs from the estuary, and you'll see the juveniles, you know, stealing from their parents. It's really fun to watch. And you can go to the National Wildlife Refuge to see this, but you get a pretty distant view. I think probably the best way to go see those whooping cranes is to take a boat-based tour. There's a couple ways you can do it. There's one called the boat is the skimmer, and that's more for folks who just want to see them and, you know, they're okay with being with a group. So you pay one fee and you go out for a few hours and they'll get you pretty close to the birds. But if you're very serious about it and you want to spend a lot of time maybe photographing the birds, there's a gentleman called Kevin Sims who owns a Jet Flash, and that boat only holds, I think, well, including him, six people. So you can get right up on the birds and photograph them. We do a photography tour every year that includes that, but you don't have to go through a professional photographer. You can get your own group together and hire Kevin and go do that. That's, I would recommend, if someone does want to see the whooping cranes, doing it that way, getting on a boat to see them.
You talked about sustainability. Are we making sure that this is going to be around for the next generation?
When you say this, do you mean
all these nature experiences? You know, we've got flora that's endangered, all sorts of development happening around the state. If we don't value this and be able to fight for it, you know, we know that prairie chicken didn't get its protection. You know, we got to wonder what's going to happen.
Right. And that's a good point. In fact, let's talk about the lesser prairie chicken for a moment. We originally, there's a place up there by Canadian where you can view those chickens by appointment. And we originally had that venue in our book. But when I talked to the gentleman that leads those tours, he said, you probably should leave it out because they're doing gas and oil development on that ranch. And I'm not sure if we'll continue those tours. So what you bring up is a reality. And I think the challenge is going to be making people aware of joys that they can feel in nature, but also making folks understand that we can coexist if that's what we want to do. And there are ways to take care of it while also developing responsibly. But one of the most important messages that I try to get through in a lot of my writing about nature tourism is, especially someone who's a big landowner, they still have property taxes to pay. They still have their families to feed, and they still have their infrastructure to keep up with, their fences, whatever. So if we can reward them financially through our dollars, through our visiting, then I think a lot of landowners would choose the sustainable path if it paid enough.
Mary O. Parker is a nature writer and the author of the book, Exploring Texas, a Nature Travel Guide. It's published by Texas A&M Press.